Welcome to the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Here, we speak with extraordinary games industry professionals and listen to their story to learn all about what they've built and who they are. GamesNet Berlin Europe is the international games industry initiative of MediaNet Berlin Brandenburg, the networking association for the media, creative and digital industries in Germany's capital region. My name is Simon Oller, and I will be your host for this program. Today, I'm speaking with Lea Schönfelder. She is the co-founder and creative partner at Fine Games. Fine is a boutique game studio, crafting charming interactive novels with cultural relevance. Fine is a German word, and it means very nice, tender, beautiful, and noble. And also something like high resolution, detail-oriented, exact. It's a beautiful word, and I think it's a name well chosen. Lea carries the spirit of Fine, and she has carried the spirit and the vision for the past 10-odd years, across which her career in gaming spans. Now, she has founded Fine Games and is pursuing her unique approach to video games. In part one of my conversation with Lea, which you're listening to right now, we speak about Lea's vision for Fine Games as an ideal workplace for others and herself, something that means a lot to her. We cover her ideas for the games she wants to make and where they come from. And we discuss why it was the right choice for her to pursue a career before making her own vision a reality, because she had the vision before she really embarked on her career, but she felt like pursuing the career first was the right choice. Why? You will get to know in this episode. Make sure you subscribe to this podcast to also find part two of this episode. In part two, we go over more personal and philosophical topics that emerge during our conversation. So for now, please enjoy my conversation with Lea Schönfelder. Hi, Lea. Nice to have you and welcome to the show.
Hello, Simon. Great to be here.
Let's start off right away. You're currently busy building your very own game studio, Fine Games. I wanted to know, for the beginning, what is Fine Games and what games are you working on?
Yeah, that's right. So I have set up Fine about a year ago together with my business partner, Franziska Feiner, who is amazing. And as of 1 week now, I'm full-time working at Fine, which is a dream really for me. At Fine, we're making games for culturally interested gamers. And we're both women, so we have a female perspective on games. We're telling personal stories for people who are interested in those.
Yeah, and well, first of congrats for the full-time gig that you gave to yourself. That must be very nice. I know that, or you just said it too, that building your own studio has been your dream for years. Do you remember when you first had that feeling? I want to build my own thing.
Yes, you're very right there. I think I had the dream since I got into games, really, which was at university. I think it's about 10 years ago or something like that. I studied animation and illustrations and then got into games a little bit by accident. And I always wanted to have my own studio, but I think I was taking it quite strategically, actually. So even from the beginning, I thought, okay, maybe straight after uni isn't the best idea. I still want to have some experience. So I applied for game jobs, actually, almost every job I could find here in Germany. And I only got one offer at Flare Games, that was back in the days. And that was my first experience. And in the meantime, I worked for other companies like Us2 Games and Nerial, and now with a bit of experience on my back, I've kind of taken a step.
So I think there are all the threads we want to talk about today, which you just mentioned, kind of the strategic steps you took in between. I want to start with your vision. So I think it's always remarkable when people have a vision early on, like very in the beginning. It's like, how is that even possible? And I'm very curious to hear what your feelings about that where and is, and maybe where that's coming from. And then in a general sense, let's talk about that, what your vision was like, and well, in many steps we can do this now, but what your vision was like and what you were aiming for with that. So yeah, if you could just expand on that a bit.
Yes, sure. I'd love to. So maybe a little bit as a background to that, I have to explain that I wasn't, as many of my colleague game designers would say, I was never playing since I was very young. So at my parents' house, games were always smiled up on a little bit, like it was always entertainment, but not so cultural, something like that. So I didn't really have much contact with them. And as I said, it was only really at art school where we got in touch, like games, and I got to know each other. And with our very first game called Ulica Dimitrova, it's a personal game about a Russian street child, I made with the father of my child now. So actually we collaborated on a game very early on. Like that was a very experimental game I made really early in my career, and a friend of ours suggested to submit it to the IGF, the Independent Game Festival, which has a lot of reputation within the industry, and it takes place in San Francisco each year. And we won a student award for that game. And so we flew to San Francisco and were part of this big, like there was a huge show on stage where people got awarded the awards, and I was part of that. And all of a sudden I saw, oh wow, there is so much more you can do with games. And similarly to us, other people are doing artistic things as well and telling personal stories as well. And it's not all shooting or stupid waste of time, if you want. So that was really the point where I thought, oh, this might actually be something for me. And now to get back to your question about my vision, I think it was, I wanted to do something different with games, like something that wasn't established yet. I wanted to make artistic games, but games that yet found their audience. Because one thing that I get really frustrated with some artists is that they are so niche and only a really small subset or an elite of people really enjoys their art. So I want to speak to a wide range of people. And just similarly to good TV shows or movies, kind of be in a discourse with the audience as well. I guess that is the vision about the games that I wanted to make, or that I always wanted to make. And now with our own company, this whole second part comes to it as well, which is that I think that sort of game can only be created in that sort of environment as well. So we want to be really progressive, take inspiration from everywhere, not just from games. We want to work with interesting people. We want to kind of shape our own our workplace, like a place we would love to work and our employees would love to work, and everybody can like express themselves.
So there's the type of art of the games, and then the type of reach of the games, and then there's also the place where these types of games can only be made, kind of thing. So that's kind of a three or multi-pronged attack on this vision, which is cool. What would you like to describe your ideal workplace that you envisioned for yourself, I suppose, that you are now, I also suppose, want to build with Fine Games? Would you like to share a bit what you think this workplace must and will look like? I know, yeah.
for a discussion, but I can say at least for myself, it's already kind of the perfect working environment. Like things that my business partner and I are thinking about is, like, of course, we want to be open and inclusive. So it's about a range of people, diversity of people that we want to work with. We're probably going to stay a remote company. Maybe one day have some like offices where people can meet, but for now we're all remote, so people can really like be flexible and incorporate their family life, like have a good balance there between family life and work life. We want to encourage people to think for themselves and kind of contribute what they think is best to the company. And then there is this whole part that is a bit less defined yet, which is more about the day-to-day business, but we're actively kind of questioning the way in which you progress through a career in traditional game studios right now, like where it's kind of performance-based, but that then sometimes is not really clear what the performance should look like. And some disciplines, like programmers, traditionally get paid loads more than artists, which I always found really unfair, because both contribute to a great product in the end. And of course, there are market forces, and sometimes you have to be a bit pragmatic as well. But these are things that we are challenging and hope that we find solutions where we can, for example, pay people based on their contribution and not based on the market rate on their discipline, for example.
Mm. Do you already have any ideas, if you want to talk about that, how you would like measure contribution? Because, right, that's probably the difficult part.
Yes, and I already said that all of that is up for debate, so anything that I express right now is rather my personal view than any policy that we have at Shine. But I personally think that the contribution, or how you measure contribution, is mainly through time and experience that people have. So if someone has, I don't know, 5 years experience and is an artist and works 8 hours a day, then they should be paid the same as a programmer who has 5 years experience and working 8 hours a day. And I wouldn't even really like measure how much they are doing in 8 hours. I would actually even question whether you have to work 8 hours a day, because I think that's actually really a lot, and most people can't actively work 8 hours a day.
Yeah, that seems like something that has always struck me. I read this very beautiful book one time. It's called Deep Work by Cal Newport, I believe. And he just, well, it's a pretty nerdy book, but he makes a very good case that, among other things, you can really only work 4 meaningful hours a day, and kind of says, well, maybe, you know, you should use the other 4 hours that you usually work, and then the other remaining 16, I suppose, hours to have more fun or something, and it's really just these 4 hours that if you make them count, that actually truly count. And after that, you know, you're probably, that your contribution is maybe more like second class or something.
I think that's perfectly reasonable. I would also add that in creative jobs, and by creative, I don't just mean if you're a designer or an artist, but also if you're a programmer. I mean, you are thinking about solutions, right? And that is creative work. Some thoughts just need to grow, and they grow no matter whether you're sitting at your desk or whether you're going for a run. Maybe they're even growing better when you're going for a run. So
yeah, or when you are asleep, or when you are, I don't know, having your preferred beverage at night, right? It's a all around thing that's happening. It's not like you're on or off. You're like pushing data into an Excel sheet, and when you're not doing that, you have nothing to do with it. That's not really the type of work we're describing, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so that's a
That's a beautiful workplace vision. Anything else you want to add to that, that you kind of feel like as a leader of this new place, you want to make come true?
Yeah, I mean, one thing that I'm really passionate about, and especially because I'm officially the creative partner of our studio, is the type of games we are making. And I'm not sure if you plan to talk about this later on. But
totally,
really,
but this is a good time, yeah.
Yeah. So it's really important for me that we tell personal stories. And the first game we are making is a game about three German women with a lot of personal inspirations of myself, but also Franziska. And later on, I'd hope that once we make, I don't know, our seventh game or IP or whatever, we would also work with other artists together that bring in their perspective and just show the world that games are a beautiful medium to share individual perspectives too.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What does that mean to you, this, you call it like a game with a unique perspective, with personal stories. Can you paint that picture a little bit? What does that mean?
Yes, I very much like to do so. So I guess you can compare it, like recently when you look at famous TV shows or Netflix shows, you have things like Unorthodox, which is about a Jewish girl traveling to Berlin, or I May Destroy You, a quite successful British series set in local subculture in London, or even Parasite, the movie that won an Oscar last year, which is a Korean movie about, yeah, like social status, I'd say. Like these type of movies and shows are quite successful and finding a big audience recently, because I think people love to dive into other worlds, something that is more than just the traditional cliche, maybe bit Anglo-American influence standard world. So people really like to get to know people, and we're taking inspiration of that and want to do similar things in games. I think there is a few good examples who try to do that already, like Edith Finch or Florence, and we think that a lot more can be explored in that direction. And when I talk about personal, it is about the topic, the characters, about the visual as well. Like, I really love it when games don't look like games, but take inspirations from outside, from art and illustration and animation or other culture. Yeah, everything that goes into it is really, should really be personal, or help to get that personality across.
Yeah, and what I'm always wondering about that is, because I think that that's a beautiful vision, and how do you integrate kind of gameplay and mechanics, maybe even monetization, dare I say, into into these things? I know we might talk about that a bit more. You have a background in rather traditional game making and publishing. Is what's your vision to integrate that, so that, you know, because you want a big audience, right? So you're it feels to me like, oh, don't you have to make this enticing to play for the average gamer? Well, average, you know what I mean, for somebody who just wants to play a cool game. Yeah, so how do you see that on the more mechanical side?
Well, I don't think that is an exclusion at all. The games market is still growing, and we've just seen that article that the biggest demographic in North America is adult women. So it's not really the traditional games market out there. In fact, we're making games by women for women because we think, like, firstly, because we're women ourselves and we kind of identify with that audience as well, but also because we think it is a smart move in terms of business as well, because the market is quite limited at the moment, like limited offers are out there. Many things are reduced to quick entertainment, like gardenscapes or murder mystery or something like that. But there is a huge percentage who is just getting bigger because new people are even more taking their phone or using their phone as their premium entertainment device. So there will be more adult people who love to play games, but also want to be inspired intellectually. And that's where we're coming in and where we want to, just offer our expertise if you want so.
Yeah. Can you describe this a bit more? The female perspective that you have as a maker and that you see in the audience, who is there? What are they looking for? What are you looking to share? You said intellectual stimulation, maybe expand on that a little bit.
So I even think that in the recent years, like when I was working at Us2 Games, the target audience wasn't that different to it. Maybe we're a little bit more targeting purely women, but at Us2 Games, I was working on Monument Valley 2 and Assemble with Care, which is an Apple Arcade title where you restore objects as a metaphor for restoring broken relationships. So all of these games that I've worked on recently were kind of going into that direction and found a big audience. And the interesting thing there is that even when we thought and were female, the audience were still mixed. So it turns out, surprise, surprise, even men like to play games that are maybe made with a female player in mind. Which shouldn't be a surprise to us, because I mean, as a woman, I know that I'm consuming so much media that was created with a male audience in mind that this is totally possible. But yeah, sometimes that might come as a surprise.
Yeah, well, I think we have masculine and feminine sides in all of us, and I think there's a balanced path of the middle there, and. I think inspired by my preparation for this interview, I kind of looked at Assemble with Care as well, and I was like, wow, that looks awesome. Yeah. I think I'm going to get it and play it. And please.
If I can just add one more thing here, and this shouldn't be understood as a bashing to my previous employers, but one of the reasons why I want to make Fine is that, and I see this because I am a woman. Like, even though Monument Valley 2 and Assemble with Care and also the games that we made at Nerial were made, I often felt that I had to defend somehow more female topics against influences that would like to turn things into more, I don't want to say male, but maybe more into, like, a lot of people always thought, oh yeah, but where is the conflict? We want this to be more existential, stuff like that, you know? And I'm kind of, I just want to do it. I don't want to think about, is this too female now? Am I seeing this through the lens of a woman or not? So I want to have the freedom, and I think we're fine, I have it, to just do whatever I want, and obviously then validate it with the users, but not have this internal, convincing process, basically.
Yeah, that's I can understand that very well. Freedom but is important.
I also want to state that I really loved working for both Us2 Games and Nerial, so there's no real blame there.
No, for sure. And do you have some examples what those things were where you were that you might have had to defend, or that these ideas that you've thought were very good in specific terms?
Yeah, so as I briefly touched up on just now, I remember one situation where I suggested a story that was quite mundane, I'd say, like about a woman traveling around and talking to people and getting to know those people. And there was a question in the team, and it came from the team and not from my bosses or anything like that. But there were these questions about, but why is she really doing that? Like, where is her conflict? And can't we have something that is more of an existential threat to her? Like, and the way that I understood it was that they wanted some danger and some, I don't know, something that gets you really excited. Where I always thought, and my preference when watching a movie or a show, are these subtle tones that come out of a smart conversation, or when you have a close-up of a face and you see just a really tiny movement in it, and that gets me excited and emotional, and I can't, that's what I want to create in games as well.
Oh yeah, okay. Now I really know what you mean, and I really feel that too. I know this show, it's called High Maintenance. Uh-huh. It's about a guy who, and I want to mention it because the first type of thing I've seen that is like what you just described. Mm. It's about a guy who rides around New York on his bike dealing weed to customers. And he's the anchor, but it's just the guy, you don't know his name. And he meets all these people, men, women, in between, all sorts of people. It's super diverse. And well, you just kind of, through him and the whatever it means, the buying of weed, you have this you just get these glimpses into stories. And it started as this mini series on Vimeo. And now it was bought by HBO, and it's like a more traditional 25-minute per episode series, but it was like 7 minutes, 13 minutes, you know, these arbitrary, just however long it took to tell the story. And it was just about glimpses into people's lives, and it was totally, and it's a great word in a way, mundane. And at the same time, so significant, unbelievable. And I remember I watched it the first time in London when I was working at Twitch at a late night in the office, where I just stumbled upon it and then didn't go home until 3 a.m. because I had to watch all the Vimeo episodes. It was so striking. So yeah. I believe because
it gets you thinking. I think that is the point. If you see those little stories, then you compare it to your own life. And at least for me, that's what it provokes, and that's what I love.
And you can see it yourself in these small moments. And I think what you mentioned, the more existential, the fighting, it's like the kind of the hero's journey that has this fight in it and this struggle for the whatever. But then you have that too in much more emotional and small moments where you can really, really see yourself in them. Mm. And so maybe that's a way or an example through which I really feel like I can understand what you want to do.
Exactly. And it's great to hear that story as well.
Yeah, I recommend the series. It's great fun. No ad. let's take one more tour. I'm really glad we talked about this. Something I really wanted to know about. I'm looking really forward to seeing you make that vision come true as you move with Fine Games. I think like you said, validate that with customers as well and make that work. Like, that's exciting. I'm wishing you all the best with that at this point. It's I want that for you and for everybody who needs the games, right?
I hope so.
I wanted to take a tour a little bit through your career, because there's still the strategic element that we haven't touched on, which I think is so interesting too. Having this vision early on, knowing, okay, it seems like I need to build something of my own here, which you are doing now. You still took your sweet time, and you had the feeling that maybe there's something to learn for me on the way first before I go into that. Can you describe your thought process, and then also kind of what the stations you went through, and when did you feel ready? It's probably the story we're looking for.
The thought process as I said, started when I was at university, and I saw people starting their own companies, making their own indie games at really young ages, right? Like, we all know the stories about the indie gamer who lived off ramen in their mother's basement for 2 years, and then they made something and they got millionaires, right? We all know this story. I personally, maybe it was fear, but I also don't think fear is a bad thing, or respect, or just curiosity. For some reason, I thought I still hadn't learned it all when I was at uni. And I think that is very true in retrospect, because a lot of the things you really have no clue about, and you only learn while working with other people and with bigger teams. So I'm really, really glad that I took this step. And at each company that I was, I learned different things. I learned a little bit about free-to-play at Flair Games, and I was a freelancer and taught at universities as well. You learn a lot from the students. And yeah, I mean, when you are in academia, you go to all these conferences and talk to other people. But I think really the most valuable lesson for me was working on the games that I really loved. And I joined Ask2 Games because they had made my favorite game, which was Monument Valley. So I was super excited to work as senior designer on Monument Valley 2. And then I got lead designer on their next IP, which is Assemble with Care. And then slowly, I had a baby in the meantime as well. So I have a little daughter. Yeah, and then slowly I thought, okay, I think I'm getting ready now. I wanted to shape more than just games. Like, I wanted to shape a company as well and make more decisions. So I found it fine. Still took a little X course to Nerial, which was with another premium games company based in the UK. Because I was still not 100% sure if Fine would take off. And they offered me a job where I had more insight into the more businessy side of things. So Tamara and Francois and Arnaud there were great mentors for me as well. I'm actually generally really lucky because I'm in very good terms with all of my previous employees, and all of them are super helpful and excited for Fine as well. I don't know. For me, it took this learning time. I'm 35 now. Sometimes I get these comments about, you should really do that now because otherwise you're getting too old. I don't really feel that way. Like, I think whether our first success was Fine as the next game or a game in 5 years, I would still be happy. So I'm not that rushed in a way. Yeah. I always tell, I have this one saying, my favorite saying in German, it's called Gute Bäume wachsen langsam, good trees grow slowly. I tell that everyone all the time. I hope it sinks in. I don't know, for some things, like especially for the type of games that we want to make that have this cultural aspect in it, I even think that you need some... Well, not that I'm wise yet, but I'm learning things. You need a little bit of life experience, right? Like, I don't think I could make the game we're making now. I couldn't have made it at the age of 19 or 21. I need to have more perspective about life.
Especially given the nature of your games, right?
Yeah.
I agree with everything. I was just wondering this one thing. When you said you had already found it fine, and then you kind of went to Nerial Games, I believe.
Yes.
Were in the, just a like curious, pragmatic question, in the application or like getting the job process, were you like transparent with that? Did you say, well, I found my own studio, so, you know, kind of I will be gone at some point? Because I'm just curious, maybe this might interest people who are also founders but want more security or more experience and found something and then still go work a job. How did you do that?
Yes, I was very transparent. I think I was as transparent with them as I was with myself. And probably that's why we are still on good terms, because I didn't know whether, as I said, Fine would take off or not either. And one thing that was very clear to me was that this option that I described in the beginning, where I would live off ramen and my mom's basement for a year, that wasn't an option for me. I always said, I'm only going to start full time on Fine when we have at least an initial funding in place, because I have a family that I need to sustain. And I'm not the youngest anymore. So it's fine for me to not be rich, but I can't live off nothing. So there was a good chance that Fine wouldn't work out in the end, and the job at Nerial would have given me something similar. So that was at this point basically the question that was up in the air, and I was transparent with that with the guys at Nerial, or the girls and guys at Nerial, and in the end, Fine took off faster than I thought. So we have some funding now; they can work full time on it. And although I was at Nerial shorter than any of us had thought or hoped for, I'm really happy that they, in the end, appreciated my openness and also were really supportive with this step.
Understood. I think that's a good route that maybe other founders might want to take, or know that there is an option, that it's not, you know, black and white, one or the other. If you would sum up this last part, what do you think were the, you said life experience was one big thing, and on the more gamey, concrete side, what were the things that you learned on your long tour on the way to founding and realizing Fine? What were the key things you, in retrospect, were like, well, I'm glad I learned that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is really important to be consistent and to have your overall, don't lose sight of your overall goals. And that sometimes, like, you have to know what you want. Do you want, like, financial success? Is that the only and the most important thing that you want? Then maybe I would have taken a different route, would have gone more into the free-to-play side. Is it really the games that you are passionate about, which for me is the case? Then we're shaping our studio according to this. I think just reflecting now and then and being really honest with yourself what your actual goal is and which steps to take in order to reach that goal is really important. And yeah, I just want to say I'm still on the way. Like, at no point I feel like I can relax and I'm happy now. I feel like I'm at the start of a journey, but very looking forward to it.
Wonderful. That's a good place to slowly wrap up part one. I have some questions on the gaming scene, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Because this is the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Before things happened, this is a very event-driven scene. So
yeah.
I was wondering what is your three questions. First one is, what's your favorite event for doing business?
Oh, that's a very good question, especially since I haven't been at an event for a year or so now.
I know, you have to go deep into the memory box.
Yes. Well, actually, an event that we really enjoyed was the where we took part at a Meet to Match event last year, where we met with other publishers and investors online. And I found that really cool and inspiring. And obviously potentially quicker than meeting in real life. But I do miss the big events. Like, I do miss Gamescom and GDC and Amaze in Berlin. Yeah.
And that's question number two. What's your favorite event for, like, hanging out, meeting friends, and having a good old time?
Well, I think Amaze is legendary, and I also really always enjoyed it when being there.
Yeah. And what's a defining memory, you would say, that connects you with Berlin and the game scene here? What's your favorite Berlin time?
My favorite Berlin time? So I don't actually live in Berlin right now. I live in Frankfurt. We planned it here due to the pandemic. I'm not going to go into details. But my favorite Berlin time was actually the visit when I flew over from London to Berlin to found Fine together with Franziska. And I remember we started the weekend with a nice glass of wine in the afternoon. Then we went to the notary and found it Fine. And the rest of the weekend, we just spent long walks talking about Fine and about what it would be and about how we want to run the business and about the game that we wanted to make. And then in the evenings, we met with friends to celebrate. So that's probably my nicest Berlin memory.
It's beautiful. So nice. Wonderful. Mm. This makes for a good part one about your career and also your visions, the mm-hmm. end and the start of a journey. For mm-hmm. now, where can people find you or follow you if they want to keep up with you and your work and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So you can find me on LinkedIn if it's more professional contact, or Twitter. And then I personally, but also with Fine, our main platform is Instagram. Any of those would work.
And the links there are, so your name is Lea Schönfelder, and do you have the handles on hand?
So it's at Lea Schönfelder with O-E. Sorry, just with O. At Lea Schönfelder.
Schönfelder, mm-hmm, with O, yeah.
Exactly.
And Fine Games, where do we find that?
Fine Games is fine. It's just Fine on Instagram. Fine.games.
Fine.games. Okay, wonderful. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. And I'll see you in part two.
Great.
Of this wonderful podcast.
Thank you very much, Simon.
Thanks for listening to part one of this episode. Be sure to also check out part two, which will be released 2 weeks after part one on all podcast platforms. So it might already be out by the time you hear this. Whatever platform you're on, subscribe or follow the GamesNet Berlin Europe podcast to listen to many more insightful conversations with fantastic games industry guests from Berlin and from all over Europe. Thank you very much and see you very soon. Bye-bye.
Hi there. Before you go, this is Florian, project manager for GamesNet Berlin Europe. If you want to stay connected to the network, find out more about upcoming events and links to other MediaNet initiatives, you can visit us at gamesnetberlin.eu and subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, and until next time.